All right, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, the number to call. We will take your calls later on in the show. 590-590 is the text line as well. We'll be joined in a few minutes by Mark Shapiro, president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, and Kevin Barker alongside me, as always. What are you smiling for?
Hi.
You got that? Hi. As we await, Mark, let me ask you this, because I don't think I've ever asked you this question. What is your number one priority for the Blue Jays going into the offseason? Just your number one
bullpen,
priority.
Bullpen, arms, more arms. So it's like every other organization. And I think the one thing, too, that sometimes we gloss over is balance of lineup. For me, that was, if you could nitpick at little something about the lineup that you saw every day with the Blue Jays, is a decent right-handed pitcher could get after their lineup 1 through 5 with two pitches. Somehow you need to mix that up a little bit, so that may be one too.
And we're seeing, I think, in the postseason this year, the importance of balance, aren't we?
Oh, well, Astros are one that just screams at balance. That Jeff Blumbus on here just yelling and screaming about how good it is, how hard it is to pitch to them. Consistently, it makes that pitcher do something they don't want to do all the time. And that's the point. It's hard.
And it also makes the opposing manager do something that he doesn't want to do all the time.
And there's not a lot of good managers, let's be honest, in baseball that are always going to make the right decision all the time, and that's what it does, is that balance of the lineup. It just smothers pitchers that are just not real good at going outside the box all the time. Mm.
Yeah. No, I think we're on the same page there. I mean, we go into the offseason. Obviously, the focus is on arms. Third base, I think, also has to be a focus as well. But, that's our opinion. I mean, certainly it's not unique opinions. I'm sure it's shared by a lot of folks, but it really doesn't matter. There are a few people whose opinions do matter when it comes to baseball in the city. Our next guest is very much one of them. He is Mark Shapiro, president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. Mark, thanks so much for joining Kevin and myself today. We trust you're keeping, we trust you're keeping well. Boy, there's a lot there. I'll get right away to a question I know you addressed in your year-end availability, but I think is something that fans will be interested in particular. You know, now that sports venues are reopening to 100% in this province and indeed around the country and around the continent, are there any trends? I know it's early, but are there any trends or sort of touch points you are interested in seeing, you know, whether it's the Leafs or the Raptors or wherever, just in terms of fans coming back, tickets being sold, how people react to even concessions, things of that nature?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think, again, yes, you learn from everything, you know, that's happened. I mean, the U.S. obviously is on not justifiably, but is on certainly a much more rapid pace and kind of opening up stadiums and arenas, so we can, and we've seen that it's a gradual progression, you know, from people coming out, you know, some people coming out to the stadiums being packed and sold out. So I'm going to imagine we will see similar things, you know, here, although I'm not sure arenas and open air stadiums are identical in the way people feel and react. But I think our responsibility and the things that we need to focus on are ensuring that we create both an environment and systems that make people feel as safe as possible. Obviously, the greatest thing that contributes towards that is the rate of vaccination here, which is among the best in the world. So April's a long time in the world that we've been living in before we're back playing again here. A lot of time to kind of watch what happens. But among the things that we have to do this offseason, Jeff, that's not one we have a lot of control over. So it'll just be kind of watching and learning, not necessarily reacting.
How creative will you have to be, or how flexible will you have to be in terms of ticketing? And I understand, I know that we have a long way to go, but in order to get fans back in the stands, clearly a winning team is number one. It's a big thing. An exciting team, which this team is a big thing. But has there been any thought given to creative packaging or just sort of different ways of maybe pulling folks back in here?
I mean, the bulk of my thought is winning. So
okay. You
know, I just don't think there's a bigger lever, but we've got people who are far more experts in sales thinking about, I know they came up with like a quarter, you know, packs that are a quarter season packs. But again, that's not something I have a lot of experience in, you know, my job's always been to hire really good people who think in those ways. What I've experienced is if you win, those things take care of themselves. And since we have the team we've got, you know, I'm not going to focus a lot of time on creative, you know, mm-hmm. bells and whistles that, you know, get 10% more people here. I think that if we, that you couldn't have a more compelling, more exciting, more fun team to watch than our team. So it's just a matter of, you know, do people feel safe? Because we're going to be a must-watch baseball for anybody that loves the game of baseball.
What are your expectations when it comes to payroll for 2022?
To have a payroll that supports us, you know, continuing to take the next step and to field a team that's capable of winning the World Series.
What have you identified as your priorities going into the offseason?
We're doing that right now, Kevin. It's not like a 5-minute conversation. I mean, all of us have opinions watching us play all year, you know, handedness, you know, a little more balance in both approach and handedness in the lineup, you know, replacing the production from the guys that are free agents, either by bringing them back or other people, you know, continuing to improve the defense, improve the bullpen. There are a variety of things, but you got to be careful too. If you're always just reacting to the most recent, you know, performances, then you're just going to be, you know, opening up another set of issues. So I think, again, it's always to build the most balanced club you can possibly do that scores the most runs and prevents the most runs. There are always multiple ways to do that. And when you go in to execute an off-season plan, you've got to have the agility and flexibility to adapt to where the most talent lies. And some of those things may be addressing the biggest gaps directly. Others may be strengthening the club even further in a way we already have a strength. So in the end, I would just say score more runs, prevent more runs, and we'll get better.
Early days and all that, but do you have a sense how soon Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien may make decisions? As I said, I understand the free agency isn't open yet, but is it something you and Ross, you'd like an answer on quickly when it does open so you could pivot off it if perhaps there isn't an opportunity to sign either of them?
No, I mean, what we like for our self-interest and you know, balance with the right that they've earned, you know, to explore the market, those players, you know, it's Kevin can speak to it, but those players, you know, work extremely hard for their lives to earn the right to become a free agent. And once they get to that point, you know, they deserve it, you know, and I appreciate that and understand that, you know, to get a full understanding of what the alternatives are out there. So that's not going to be quick. I mean, maybe it'll be quick in one of the cases, or, you know, because we're aligned and they really want to stay here, but I think that's unlikely. So it's going to require patience. It's going to require us examining alternatives as well in case they don't come here for a variety of reasons. But we've got only positive relationships with all three guys. And I think all three guys want to ensure that we're an option and alternative for them as they go through their decision-making process.
You may answer this in my last question, but if third base is a priority for you guys, what did you see and think of Santiago Espinal? And do you think he could be a starter at the big league level, being an everyday third baseman?
I mean, I don't think third base is his prototypical position, but again, like, I think he's a part of a championship team and, you know, really encouraged by his performance last year, and think if he continues to get stronger, you know, and can drive the ball, you know, even a little more, that he's got a chance to be an everyday player.
And just to kind of jump in on Kevin's question there, Mark, you've got a couple of infielders in the minor league system, Jordan Groshans and Aurelvis Martinez, that a lot of people have been talking about. Do you see either of them at some point, maybe not this year, maybe not the year after, filling that third base role? internally?
They're great prospects that we're excited about. When it comes to prospects, I mean, I'm probably going to be a little redundant with things you've heard me say in the past when we talked about like Bo and Vladdy, but you know, if we're having to make a decision when they get here or forecast that, then we got a good chance to make a bad decision. So my answer to you would be I'm extremely excited about both those guys. They're both extremely young, doing some really impressive things throughout the landscape of the entire minor leagues. When they're ready to be in the conversation for Toronto, you'll know it. They'll be a AAA, and they will be performing at a level that says, you know, we're ready for the next level. We're not getting challenged by this level anymore. You know, one guy was in A-ball last year and the other guy was in AA and had very good years. So let's have that conversation a year from now. Or maybe they speed that up during the season next year. But that's not part of our planning right now.
Mark, when I played, I think there was such a thing as untouchable prospects. Does that exist in today's way of thinking?
I've never, you know, in 30 years of doing the job, there's no such thing. You know, I mean, I think that doesn't mean that the deal someone would have to put together to get a prospect would be unrealistic. That could make a guy, you know, in some ways untouchable. But, you know, there's a value, you know, for every single player. I think what's more important is understanding that we have to have balance on our roster, that we've got to maintain a healthy, strong, vibrant farm system in order to have a sustainable team. And that, you know, while we've demonstrated that we're willing to trade young players at the right time, there always has to be a commitment to maintaining that kind of pipeline of talent coming up. Otherwise, you'll fall off a cliff at some point.
I had a question from Max in Toronto who wanted to know, you know, with the success that the Red Sox and Yankees had this year, although I guess we can argue about the success the Yankees had, but with them being where they are and with Tampa Bay being where they are, he was wondering how much pressure you feel to spend in free agency, you know, to show the young core that you were that you're serious about winning.
I mean, I feel pressure, and we all feel pressure to get better. And I'm just happy that getting better is one, two, or three games and not 20 like it was 2 years ago. So if you don't wake up feeling pressure, you're doing the wrong job and in the wrong business. And the landscape that we've got in AL East, you know, is just part of the reality that always existed. But you know, I do feel like our team is as talented, if not more talented, than any team in the AL East. The year of experience is going to help us. A year of maturity with our young players is going to help us. And we will supplement and you know, with players around them.
Mark, I'm wondering, now that the 2021 season has, you know, for some teams has ended, the minor league season has certainly ended as well, and I know the Arizona Fall League has started up, will there be a process, or will there be a time where people kind of sit down and try to figure out what exactly the absence of, you know, a minor league season in 2020, what effect it had on the development of players?
Yeah, it's a good question, Jeff. I think it's going to take years to kind of understand that fully. You know, we certainly dealt with a greater number of injuries last year. Fortunately, they were smaller in nature, but, you know, that time off, you know, for some people and other people, you know, like an Alec Manoa who had 9 minor league starts prior to what he did last year, it didn't seem to have any impact at all. So I think it's just, it's hard to generalize that across an entire population. But for most mortal players, to miss a full year of development will have some impact. But everybody's playing. Anytime something happens that impacts all teams universally, it's harder to determine what the impact is because we're all dealing with the same set of circumstances. It's more of an issue if, like, one team deals with that or one of three teams kind of thing.
RJ and Elmiro wanted to know, and this is a question we wanted to ask you as well, given the success of Alec Manoa, is there another prospect in the organization that might be ready to take that step forward? As you said, Alec didn't have a lot of starts in the minors. It was a pretty significant step forward. Are there other minor leaguers in your system that we should maybe keep an eye on?
I guess I'd answer that instead by saying, you know, what's unique about him, you know, and I've seldom seen a young player with his level of experience that's better able to slow down to compete at the level he competes at. His compete level is just elite. His ability to separate pitch to pitch and make adjustments, you know, within his start, not just from start to start. So there's a unique mental makeup there. There's a unique level of competitiveness and confidence there. It's been very few guys I can ever remember in my career that have transitioned like he's transitioned, and with the level of confidence and unflappability, even after tough moments and tough starts or pressure, high pressure environments. So I wouldn't want to put that label on anybody else or compare anybody else. There are a lot of players we're really excited about, but I think what I would say for a fan that, you know, may not have watched as much baseball as we have, you know, this guy is something special, and what he accomplished this year was incredibly impressive and unique.
Mark, I know you're a baseball man, and this time of the year, if you're a baseball man, this is the best time to be watching baseball. But I'd love to get your thoughts on how, when you sit down and watch playoff games, how do you watch them? Do you look at how long the games take? Do you look at the quality of the pitching, the base run? How do you watch a baseball game this time of the year?
Reluctantly, if we're not playing. I'll be honest with you, man. Like, I can't not watch, but I can't really watch. It's interesting. Like, my whole career's been like that. Like, I start off a night thinking I'm not going to watch the game, and I end up watching the game, but I'm not locked in, Kevin, the way I normally am. I think my takeaway is just, man, just reaffirming what I've always believed, just get in. You know, we're better than the hottest team in baseball right now. We were 6-0 against during the season, you know, and they had Acuna when we played them. So, but they're the best team in baseball at this moment in time. And, you know, it just gets back to find a way to get in, and you do that enough and you got a chance to win a world championship. So, the type of baseball that gets played when every single moment is heightened in importance, it's going to be different. You know, I'm not sure what we can do about that. That's just the reality of the way decisions are made, games are managed, the time they take, all those things.
Last question before I let you run. We've already seen on social media Vladdy Jr., pictures of Vladdy Jr. working out. We know the strides he took literally and figuratively last offseason. Is his off-season program this year going to be any different than last year's?
I think that's a better question for Ross. I mean, I think my hope would just be that, you know, the discipline that and the maturity that he showed in strides and progress he made last year would be something that, you know, as any player becomes, you know, the player that, you know, is kind of the trademark that kind of resembles his career. He was so incredibly young when he got here. I would think that he's learned some things about himself. Ultimately, players need to take accountability and ownership of their own career. There's no organization or manager or coach that can do that for them. So I think Vladdy is kind of learning himself, learning the impact of what that disciplined offseason provided for him, and then in the commitment he sustained during the season. And we're always here to provide those resources and support.
Mark, really good of you to join us today. You know we always appreciate your time. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Have a great offseason.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks. Good to be with you guys.
Take care. It's Mark Shapiro, president of the Toronto Blue Jays. And that's something you've always talked about with Vladdy Jr., or with any player, is taking ownership and accountability of your career.
Yeah.
And you've said quite often, sometimes you have to step up and say things to people to show that you're taking ownership.
Yeah, Vladdy shouldn't need somebody to walk up to him and say, you're looking heavy. I mean, I don't want to say it in a bad way, but quite frankly, he's shown that if he keeps himself in shape with the ability that he has on and off the field, he can be second to none. And he shouldn't need somebody to walk up and tell him that. He should be able to know that this is what it takes to be an everyday player. He wants to play 162 games, and then however many games they're going to play in the playoffs. Mm. And you got to, you know, adjust your workouts in the offseason according to that. And I'm sure he's going to do that. He's hungry. You can see that. That's why he's throwing out these Instagram photos and videos of him working out, because he's hungry. He wants to be the best. And when you have talent like he does and wants to go off the field and do the things he does, If you're, again, I've said this till I'm blue in the face. You're a Blue Jays fan. If you're a baseball fan, you should be pumped up to see Vladdy doing these things in the offseason.
Yeah, he's and he started it, you know, in the middle of the pandemic year. He talked about it. He lost weight during the season, and I think a lot of people. It's not that they were reluctant to give it credit, to give him credit for it, but I think a lot of people who were critical of Vladdy didn't, for whatever reason, feel inclined to give him credit for the way he did lose weight as the season went on. And this is a young guy. Yeah, he's an uber-talented player and all of that stuff, and he's a great prospect. But he's a young guy who had to learn how to manage his body, how to manage his diet. You know, it's one thing to have your mom cooking for you and everything like that and having the best nutrition in the world. At some point, guy has to go, nah, I've had enough. At some point, you have to take ownership of that. And the transformation, going from a guy that we said his best position was standing at the plate holding a bat, and boy, he may have to keep him on the field, he may have to DH him a lot, et cetera, to go from that to being a first baseman who was capable of playing first base every day in a team that came within a couple of wins of the playoffs, that's a huge step forward. I don't think we give him enough credit beyond the hitting for doing what he has done at an early age. That's a thing that amazes me, that he's made himself, Kevin, he's made himself a good first baseman, not a gold glover. He's made himself a good first baseman.
All you need to know about the person Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is he stood up in front of his teammates and apologized for being overweight.
Yep.
Sorry I showed up looking like I look, because that's not going to help our team. Takes a real man to do that. You ever stood up in front of people and apologized for something?
Yeah, several times.
I haven't really done that. It's different when you're with guys as much as they are,
yes,
in spring training and off season and during the season, and you want to go in the playoffs and how many days you're with these men. It's not the easiest thing for a 21-year-old to do that, and he stood up and did it. He took ownership, and he wants to be the best in the world at it. And I give him credit for it. You know, it took a coach, a organization, to call him in a room and say, hey, you got to make some changes. We have to move positions because you're overweight. Fix it. He went and fixed it, and now look at him. Give him credit.
The numbers are 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590. We will spend the rest of the show talking about the Blue Jays, giving you a chance, as always, to have your say. You heard Mark Shapiro's comments. Keep in mind, of course, that at this point in time, and I think Mark talked about this in his availability earlier in the week, there are priorities. There is a plan, or there will be a plan in place to proceed during the postseason. You're not going to get everything done at the same time. You're not going to make a trade right now and re-sign your free agents, and you've got to deal with the immediate issues when they present themselves. Right now, free agency is not necessarily an immediate issue. We know in the case of Robbie Ray, we suspect, or we think in the case of Robbie Ray, there was not a great deal of dialogue this year, simply because both sides seem to want to leave well enough alone. And also, I think, quite frankly, the Jays and Robbie Ray probably at some point, when they agreed to the one-year contract last winter, at some point there must have been a discussion about what it would take to get something done long-term. Just groundwork being laid. Marcus Semien, were led to believe there were more discussions. There was, I wouldn't say a greater emphasis, but Marcus Semien and his agent appeared to be a little more open to re-signing here. And then, of course, you have to include Steven Matz in that situation. I liked what Mark said. You know, they're going to have to be patient. There's a chance that everything may align with one guy. And that's when Mark talks about free agency, I like the fact, and he's done this a couple of times, and it's kind of a subtle change from what you normally hear, what we've normally heard from executives. You know, instead of approaching free agency with fear, you hear Mark talk about free agency. I think this is because his dad was an agent. You hear Mark talk about free agency and talk about how it's a right, which it is. It's a right that a player has earned. I know people may roll their eyes, but I think if you're a baseball person or a baseball executive, if you look at your player going into free agency as it's not a bad thing, it's a right the player has earned, Kevin, I think that allows you to approach it a little differently. I think it allows you to make the whole dialogue around free agency a little less negative. You know, wow, we're going to lose it. No, this is his right. He's earned this right. He had a great year for us, helped us win games. So we're negotiating with a guy, admittedly, we're negotiating with a guy who was in a very strong position. I think sometimes that approach makes a difference.
Yeah, I think so. I can only speak from this, from the player side of it. I worked my tail off to try and just have the day where I could go on the market and other teams wanted you and would spend big money to get you. Yeah. Every player, Robbie Ray wants that. Marcus Semien wants that. Marcus Semien's basically came out and said it, that he's going to go to the market and wants to be a part of having the conversations about, well, you know, I can go to an organization and be meaningful playing shortstop or playing second now or whatever mm-hmm. the position may be, just having the right to have the conversation because you've earned it. Every player wants that. I know I did.
Yeah, and I've also said this several times that what I also enjoy about when Mark talks about free agents, and this is something that, you know, it gradually changed over the years, but one of his points earlier this year when talking about why it was important to get Jose Berríos in camp and essentially buy yourself time to negotiate with somebody who's a free agent after next year. So he said, it's hard for us to attract free agent pitching. And right away I'm thinking, okay, he's going to bring up the Canada. It didn't bring up the Canada thing. He said, it's hard for us to attract mm-hmm. free agent pitching because of the ballpark, because it's hitter-friendly park. It can be a hard park to pitch in. And because of the division we play in. And I like that because now you are couching or you are structuring the argument around baseball stuff, stadium stuff, not necessarily, well, the border, passports, foreign country. I think the Jays kind of frankly realize it. You know how you get around that issue? You give it another year and more money
yeah.
to get around. It's amazing what an extra $18 million will do to that border as an issue. So like I said, when I hear Mark talk and Ross talks the same way, there's a confidence that hasn't always existed in front offices in this city. It did a little bit with Alex was here. You know, JP Ricciardi, I love JP, but there was always free agency was always this, God, it's this thing that we got to avoid. And Jesus, now we're going to, and I don't get that tone from these guys. And I think it's important for fans, but I also think it's important for baseball people. I think it's important for baseball players, Kevin, when they talk to a team, that the team talks to them and is aware of their strengths and weaknesses.
George Springer, the deal they gave him will tell you they're willing to spend money, and they have a really good team. If I'm a free agent, why would I want to come to the Toronto Blue Jays 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years? Because the team wasn't any good. Now the team's really good. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a pitcher coming here, that you can have some hiccups throughout the season because of the offense they have. It's okay. Yeah. You might still have a chance of winning games. That's the whole thing for me is, you know, it's one thing to say all the other things about free agency. It's another thing to have a good team and be willing to spend money. They have both of those.
It is, as someone who's been around, you know, this team since 2000, it really is. It's refreshing to have baseball executives who are really aggressive and who are pushing the cause of the team and who think that there are enough strengths in this city and enough strengths with this organization that you can sell players on it. And that is, I don't know if it registers with fans necessarily. I like to think it does with smarter fans. And it certainly does with me. And I would be saying this even if it wasn't working the same company. I like my baseball executives to be positive and to sell, to believe. You can't sell someone on something, Kevin, unless you believe in the product yourself. You just can't.
This is the first time, I don't know about you, that Mark seems like he's a little bit more open. A little bit more, here it is. This is what we're trying to be. This is who we want to be. We want to be consistently that. Well, and we're willing to do whatever we have to do to get it done.
As Mark just pointed out, the team leading the National League Championship Series, the Jays were 6-0 against them this year when they had Ronald Acuna.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are a lot of things that Mark and Ross and the Jays and baseball fans are seeing around the postseason that are just reinforcing how good and how close this team is. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. I have not forgotten about you. We'll get to the calls. You're listening to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Game 5 of Braves and Dodgers goes tonight at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet.
Is it over?
I mean, I've gone back and forth in the Red Sox-Astros. This feel, the Braves-Dodgers series feels a little different. I don't think it's over tonight. I think the Dodgers win another game. I don't have a good feel for it. I mean, how do you have a feel for, how do you know what the hell's going to happen? Yeah, I mean, look at the scores in that series. Look at the scores in the Astros Red Sox series. I don't know what's going to happen. And you know, one thing we didn't talk about with Chris Sale last night. Chris Sale looked awfully good.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking Chris Sale is now an option for the Red Sox out of the bullpen in Game 7 if there's a Game 7. And if Chris Sale's an option for the Red Sox out of the bullpen in Game 7, and he's got that good stuff.
Yeah, 9-1. He was good, and they, what's the score?
9-1. I know.
I don't want to state the obvious
there. I don't have a good feel for either series. I still think the Dodgers are the better team, but I think they've managed themselves into a corner, or they've thought themselves into a corner. I don't know if I'd necessarily say they manage themselves into a corner. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. You heard our conversation with Mark Shapiro. Well, we want to get your reaction to that conversation and any other thoughts, questions, notions you have about the Toronto Blue Jays. Jimmy in Hinton, Alberta. What's up, Jimmy?
Not too much. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Long time listener, 17 years actually. I moved out here from Niagara Falls, and I listen to the Fan 590 every day.
Where's Hinton, by the way?
I wake up just south of Jasper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, her up there.
Nice country.
Anyway, if you're not stoked after that interview with Mr. Shapiro, I mean, you don't have a pulse. That's the most encouraging interview I've ever heard. Like, he talked about spending enough to win the World Series, and then he spoke of balance, which you don't hear of someone specifically asking for that. So I'm really stoked at this. Like, we're going to get some left-handed bats. I can't see either Ray or Simeon coming back, but even if they don't, I am fully confident that this guy is going to bring back more than he lost, 100%.
Yeah, Jimmy, you made an interesting point. Thank you very much for the call. You made an interesting point about Mark, and I'm going to include Ross in this as well. Listen, they understand how close this team got to the playoffs. What did Mark say? Mark had that great line about, you know, he'd rather, I'm happy that we're, he was asked about if he was happy the team got better. You know, getting better for us now is only 3 games. It's not 20 games, so it's a step forward. Their remit, their marching orders are very clear. The team has to win more games next year. The team has to go to the postseason next year. Like I said, meaningful baseball in September, that's gone. Now we're talking about meaningful baseball in October. And based on everything we've seen, signing George Springer, completing the renovations in Dunedin, now they're getting a new scoreboard as well, but completing the renovations in Dunedin, all of that stuff at a time where the team really, I mean, the team hasn't been able to sell tickets at home. The team hasn't been able to play in front of a capacity crowd at home for two full seasons now. The commitment that is there from ownership and from the front office, I think, Kevin, gives fans like Jimmy a lot of confidence that if Ray and Semien don't re-sign, and I think there's a chance they get one of them. I don't think they're going to get both. I think there's a chance they get one of them. But that in the very least, the Jays' reaction to that won't be to punt on the season or to stand still. It will be to be proactive mm-hmm. and do what they can to make the team better. And if they can't do it through free agency, then I think you do see them. You do see them try to make a trade. I will just say this. They are going to try to trade for Jose Ramirez. And I'm not just throwing that out there. They did at the trade deadline. They're going to try to trade for Jose Ramirez. And further to Jimmy's point, the fact that this organization worked hard to sign Michael Brantley, now it didn't work out, but the fact that they worked hard to sign Michael Brantley after signing George Springer tells you that they understand that balance is important here.
That's a no-brainer. Look, I asked him the question about how he watches the playoffs, and it was interesting that he mentioned the Braves, the best team, the hottest team, was 6-0. That just seems like that ticked him off a little bit. Like he sees that his team, if they got in, they're better than any of the four teams that are in it now. They could make a serious run at this thing, and that would tell you that they're going to be very specific on how they go about making their team better, which is the obvious choices and the balance. And, you know, that they have good pieces. They have a good core. They have good veteran leadership. They have guys who have been there and done it before. Now they just need final pieces. When's the last time you could say that about a Blue Jays organization? Just final pieces now. A little balance and some better arms when it matters the most.
It's a different feeling than 15 and 16. It's a younger team. 15 and 16, even at the trade deadline, the only way that team was going to make the playoffs was for Alex to do what he did, to go out and just and basically get that, those guys. Well, they absolutely need it. But that's different than now. Because we talked about this. 2015, 2016, that was the end.
That's real simple for me. The 15 and 16 didn't have Bo and Vladdy that you could think of the next 10
or
years of seeing that production, or 7 or 8 years, whatever. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
A long time.
No, it's very true. And that, I will keep reminding people that they spent a lot of money on George Springer last year, but they were also willing to spend more money on Michael Brantley. I don't know why that didn't happen. We're all led to believe, and you know, you hear things. I mean, we're all led to believe that it was close. I certainly know this. It's an indication that the Jays realized that even after signing George Springer, they still needed to address balance, you know, and they weren't able to do that during the year. They tried Corey Dickerson. They got guys that'll help in that area, but the two areas that they weren't able to address in the offseason were balance and the bullpen.
Yeah, I don't see how real fans of baseball and the Blue Jays could be negative about this team and this organization right now today. The way they have this lined up, the way they have this set up to be good for the next 3 or 4 years is that everything's headed in the right direction.
And John.
Sorry about that. And no,
go ahead.
Get it done. They want to get it done, which is the big deal.
John in Oshawa, what's up?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I just wanted to ask you guys, what can Major League Baseball do about these four-hour games? It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, this is the same conversation that people have been having for years and years. John, what do you, we've had ideas before. What do you have any ideas? I mean, you're watching the games. Do you have any ideas?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Travis.
But the average Joe can't be watching these games because they're going to bed. They got to get up in the morning.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call. We've talked about pitch clocks.
Yeah, it's not
going to
help. That's not going to help in the playoffs. It's the number of pitchers.
Well, And it's funny, Travis Sochuk, who has written for a number of publications and is really, he is a real original thinker when it comes to analytics, made a point about how many foul balls we see. There are some things you can't get around. There are a lot of foul balls this postseason. That's baseball. That's good hitters zoning in on good pitchers. The pitching changes. I mean, God, we've talked about it. I don't think there's any way you can limit pitching changes. I threw out my silly idea about if you're going to use a guy as a starter, as a reliever in the postseason, he has to have made an appearance during the regular season as a reliever. Oh, hey, is that any dumber than limiting pitching than forcing pitchers to face three batters when they come in the game? That hasn't sped the game up. That hasn't done a damn thing. Putting the three batter minimum in hasn't been a failure, but it hasn't done a damn thing to speed up games. They might as well get rid of it.
Yeah, if you're Major
League, might as well get rid of it.
If you're Major League Baseball and all you're talking about is we need starting pitching to be better to have these games go and have a little bit better flow. In the Astros game last night, one pitcher went 8 innings, the other starting pitcher went 5 1/3. It still went 3 hours and 32 minutes long.
Great point. I have to admit, I haven't been looking at the commercials. I haven't put a stopwatch on the commercials to see if the breaks are longer. I kind of presume they are, but when you get the best pitchers in the game and the best hitters in the game, and they're facing each other time and time and time again, they're facing each other multiple times over a 10-day span, you're just going to get long games because guys, there's less trickery involved. There's less ways to fool guys. Guys have seen the same reliever three times. I think it's beyond putting the pitch clock in. I just don't know what you do. I don't necessarily think you do anything else. It's the way it is. You know, unless you want to cut the games down to 7 innings.
Good luck. Owners aren't going to like that. Money out of their pocket.
Well,
I don't like that.
I understand it's an issue. I understand that fans, especially younger fans, prefer more action. That's my focus. If you have a four-hour, I got to be careful how I say this, because this, if I have a four-hour baseball game where there's a lot of action, a lot of these games had action,
yeah,
then I'm okay with it. I agree with you. A 9-1 game where one starter went
8 innings,
the other went five
and a third.
There's no reason for that to take three and a half hours.
No.
Like if it was 9-7, multiple rallies, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. And further to Kevin's point, Framber Valdez, what, he had 70 pitches through 5 innings? It's not like he was grinding through 20 pitch innings.
Mm-mm.
So all I will say is I know that this will be addressed during CBA talks. I know there are going to be rule changes. Just be careful, because I'm using that three batter minimum as another example. It hasn't done a damn thing to speed up the game. Has not made an impact. It's effectively a useless rule. And my concern is that sometimes you throw a bunch of stuff against the wall to try to fix something you think needs to be fixed, you end up getting unintended consequences. But having said that, I completely get why people have an issue with four-hour games.
It doesn't help either that there's two games in one day and they each take over 4 hours. That doesn't help either. I know there's nothing they can do about that because you don't want games going up into November.
Yep.
But 8.5 hours of baseball games is.
Daryl and Whitby. Hey, man,
hey guys,
what's up?
How are you?
Good, good.
Good, how are you?
We are good.
Good. I heard Mark on earlier. I don't know if you guys caught it, but when you asked him the question, I forget if it was you, Jeff, or if it was Kevin, but you asked him about Espinal being an everyday third baseman. And I don't know the wording that he used, but he almost made it sound like that's not a hard position to fill, but I disagree with that. I think the hot corner is one of the hardest. It's hard to find a steady third baseman there that also can hit for average too on top of it. So
yeah, I didn't get that impression necessarily. I got the impression that he thought that there were going to be some options out there. For it. Listen, Santiago Espinal is a fine piece and a good team.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's an everyday third baseman on a World Series
team.
He
said that in a very nice way, that he's a good enough player to be on a championship team. He's trying to word it in a way where he didn't want to downplay the player, because the player's
That's
good.
A great point.
He's an average player at the big league level. Is he an everyday player? And I've said this to you, how would it look if pitchers start game planning against him if he's an everyday player? That's the question you got to ask yourself. And that's the whole point in having everyday players, is you want them to be able to make adjustments. And I'm not sure he can do that on an everyday basis.
I'll throw the question back to you, Daryl. Do you think he can be an everyday third baseman?
I don't think so. I don't think he's ready for that yet. He hasn't had enough hours at it yet in the big leagues for that. I think they need a more seasoned vet there.
Yeah.
If they're talking about winning next year, that's what you can't have trial and error. You got to have a guy that's ready to go there every day and that can produce at that level.
Yeah, really well said. Yeah, thank you, Daryl. That is right.
Especially too, if that 40 home run guy doesn't come back to play second base, then you got a second baseman that you don't know, and then if you got Santiago Espinal playing third, that's a big stopgap between really good hitters and not such good hitters.
I would be okay with Ramirez at third and a platoon of Biggio and Espinal at second.
I'm not sure. I'm a big fan of that. I'm not sold on Kevin Biggio yet. He's a
good
person.
Kevin, but if you get Ramirez, you're it'd be great to have Ramirez and Semien. That probably isn't going to happen. But what I'm saying is, if I've got Ramirez and I'm replacing the offense I've lost with Semien, I'll get by with Santiago Espinal and Kevin Biggio at second base hitting ninth in my lineup.
Astros right now, best lineup in baseball, and their eighth and ninth hitters not very good. And they're you know, one of them is almost an everyday catcher. So I get your point. You could get away with one of those two guys hitting eighth or ninth if you got the first seven spots taken care of. I'm with you. It just puts a little bit more pressure on everybody else, and the turnover between the eight and nine guy to get them to on base for the 1, 2, 3 guys. But, you know, at this point in time, we're greedy when it comes to having the best at every position.
I will tell you what, I watched Santiago Espinal all year, and I think to myself, son, if only you hit left-handed.
Maybe. He's the best defender they got in the infield.
Yeah. Only he did that, but I think you're right. He's got a spot in my team.
Third baseman.
I don't think he's an everyday third.
Have to have some run producing in them, not run prevention all the time. That's my point. Yeah.
And that is going to be especially the case if the second baseman isn't back.
Yep.
And if the second baseman is back, then maybe you're looking for something different. But the very least you can't go through the first 2.5 months of the season like you did last year getting the defense you were getting at third base. You just can't. That kind of gets lost in everything that happened last year, but the Jays defense was atrocious at third base.
Now, you could argue, too, if you get better arms out of the bullpen, defense doesn't come into play because that's swing and missy.
You're going to have balls. American League, it's always going to be balls hit down. Balls pulled down the third baseline. It just is. You're going to have a good defender at third base.
Mm.
That is it for us today. We will be back tomorrow. Don't forget, it'll be the Braves and the Dodgers. Game 5 tonight, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet. And enjoy the baseball. You've been listening to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.